Welcome to episode 30 of Tahrir Podcast from the heart of Cairo. Earlier today, the 25th of September, 2023, and a couple of hours ago, Egypt's National Election Authority held a press conference. In that press conference, dates and details regarding Egypt's presidential election were announced. Although expected, the details announced were quite tight. An independent candidate now has roughly two weeks and 4 days to be exact, to collect 25,000 citizen endorsements, which is why this episode's title is the self-explanatory Idris Microwave Election. A non-independent candidate, however, can resort to getting 20 parliamentarian endorsements, which, as you'll find out, is how most candidates, quote, candidates, are likely to get a shot at running. There are only six candidates. Only three of them could be argued to be independent, two of which have a shot not at winning, but at having their names on the ballot. We'll be getting into details shortly, so stay on. The microwave election term comes into play not only because the election was announced exactly 2 months before it's set to take place, but because of the absurd dates announced. By November 9th, candidates should have their ballot symbols, which are to appear beside their name on the ballot. By December 8th, all advertisements and campaigns should go, quote, silent, giving candidates exactly 29 days to officially campaign, utilizing their ballot symbols in a country of 100 million plus people. One candidate has already made international headlines for having his phone targeted via predator software and led Apple to releasing a new iOS update fixing that exploit. He also claims that he had tens of volunteers from his campaign arrested. Worthy of mention also is the fact that Hisham Asim, the founder of the Egyptian Organization for Human Rights, founder of Masri Lyoum, and a publisher, and who was leading the Free Current, an opposition coalition, which ceased its activity following his arrest, citing that he was a potential presidential candidate, is now in jail. His Free Current deputy, Gamila Ismail, is running as the sole female candidate in that race. Worthy of mention, too, is the case of Haysam Khalifa, an Egyptian Yale University graduate student who commentated on Egypt's presidential election only to be arrested shortly after. In this episode, Mahmoud Salem, an award-winning writer and commentator on Egyptian politics, and I, the extremely anonymous host and the sole individual behind this podcast, will be presenting and commentating on all things related to the presidential election we know of so far, including but not limited to the candidates, the election itself, interference, and I will try to do that in about 30 to 40 minutes. Many similar episodes will follow. So first of all, let me give you my two cents regarding these absurd dates and who I think is most likely to gather them. But before that, let me welcome Mahmoud Salem.
How are you, anonymous host? How is everything?
I'm doing good.
You are from the heart of Cairo. I'm from the heart of downtown Cairo in Berlin, like where the downtown Cairo scene has moved. Alhamdulillah, thank God. And yes, please give us your, by the way, the microwave elections like term is genius, because not only is it about the speed of everything, but it's also about like how like the entire country is cooking right now. Like the heat is on, the country is boiling from inside out for a number of issues. Like it's an interesting time to be in Cairo, anonymous host, and yani, my heart is with you. Strength.
Yeah, I could attest to that. It's really, really bad.
Yeah.
So regarding my two cents about these dates and who I think is most likely to be able to actually just run. So far there are six candidates, three of which are could be argued to be independent. So the first, former parliamentarian and Nasserite Ahmed Tantawi. The second, the Egyptian Social Democratic Party's Farid Zahran, the president of the party. And Dostur Party, the Constitution Party's Gamila Ismail. So out of these three candidates, I think two have a decent shot at actually being on the ballot. The first of which I think is Tantawi, for he claims that he has so far 20,000 volunteers in his campaign. And since you need 25,000 citizen endorsements, I think that should not be a problem for him, as the number is likely to grow and he is likely to be able to garner that support, given that he has a number of headquarters spread throughout Egypt, surprisingly. And Zahran, Farid Zahran, the Social Democratic Party's Farid Zahran, on the other hand, is unlikely to be able to garner 25,000 citizen endorsements, for he is not really known, which isn't really surprising. So one way in which I think Farid Zahran is likely to be able to be on the ballot is through the other option, the parliamentarian option, where you could get 20 parliamentarians to endorse him, and that way he can be on the ballot. And how we could do that is through his security connections. He already had gotten 7 members of his party into parliament through the government-sponsored electoral coalition. And so accordingly, he already has 7 votes in his pocket. Now he only needs 13. He would only need 13 votes. And how he could garner these 13 votes is not through campaign. It's rather that the government or state security in that context would be the one lending him that support and these 13 votes just for the sake of making, of drawing a picture, basically, of relative political freedom and, you know, there's a contestation and stuff like that. And that, what I think, is likely to take place. And the case with Gamil Ismail, Ad-Dustur's party president, leader, I don't think she has enough support on the ground. And that's partly not because of her as a person, but rather because of the period we've been living in Egypt, because of the last decade of Egyptian politics, which makes it really close to near impossible to be able to get out there, especially if you want to run for office. And she lacks both. I think she lacks the popularity that Tantawi has, and she lacks the government or state support that Zahran has, which puts her in a disadvantage when it comes to both. Accordingly, I think Tantawi and Zahran are going to be on the ballot, as well as maybe 2 more state government-supported candidates, puppets, rather. Yeah, I think that's my take on who's going to make it on the ballot. Tantawi, Zahran, and maybe a couple of state security supported backed guys to just make it look good.
So if this is your 2 cents, I do have a question and a comment.
Go ahead.
Can you name the other 2 candidates that are, like, you know, that are clearly state influenced? Because I think I heard there is an interesting name amongst the 2.
Sure. Yamama.
Yeah, that's
Salam Yamama of the Wafd Party.
Wafd Party, and he announced that he intends to vote for Sisi when he was into the election ballot. Like, he's running, but he intends to vote for him himself. Yeah. Yes. Next,
there is Hazem Omar of the Republican Party.
And he is the Republican Party. Isn't it amazing? The Republican Party. That's all, like, with Abu Hashima backing it, like, you know, the known steel billionaire that was a staple of the CC, like a big part of the CC regime's, like, you know, first election era, one would say, like, first phase one, you know. And but then, like, he was removed from, like, you know, the public scene, whatever, for a bit. Anyway, nobody knows Hisham Omar. Who is the third guy?
Al-Fadali of the Peaceful Democratic Party, which, ironically, he was...
The Camel guy, the guy who orchestrated the attack during January 25, you know, 2011, that involved camels that everybody saw across the world. That man is the presidential candidate for which party, my friend?
The Peaceful Democratic Party.
I'm sorry. it's amazing. It's quite amazing. Like, I love it. Whoever is writing this script, it has, like, a really good dealer, I swear. Like this, I cannot make this up. Like, for this man to, like, be the candidate of this party in this elections, like, they're not even trying, are they? Like, They're not even. So the comment that I have is in regards to Jamila Smail. And I would have to say that you can discount Jamila Smail in terms of, yeah, maybe like party organization, like, you know, widespread underground support, maybe slightly out. Like, but like, for example, she ran a couple of elections in her area and she lost due to like people faking that, like, you know. In the area of Asr Nil, like Jamila Smail could have easily been the MP in 2011 if it wasn't for, like, you know, another MP basically, like, you know, cheating. And well, I know people work for the MP and I know, like, that he did cheat. So, but that's not the point. The point is you are talking about the person who in the 80s started the program Amenio Ereni, which was like one of the few, like, you know, programs an entire generation, an entire millennial generation grew up with. On the other hand, you're dealing with someone who has been on television as a journalist and as a media personality for a very long time as well, besides being a politician. So she has name recognition and she has, people know who she is. They might not know what she stands for, they might not like her, they might have opinions about her, but the name is, there is a brand. Like, there is a much bigger brand than Fareed Zahran, right? And that gives her influence, I think, and that gives her enough influence that somehow she manages to be the person Yusuf al-Husseini, right after the economic conference of last year in November, that brings her on his show on, like, I think the channel, the state TV, to present, like, the side of the opposition, like, which she did for, like, 15 minutes, right? Which then was followed by Sisi himself calling Yusuf al-Husseini to discredit and rebuttal her for an hour and 15 minutes, right? This happened on national television last year.
He was also standing for the whole duration of the call.
Made Yusuf al-Husseini stand the entire duration, which I love, Saraha. Please always do this. Any man who, like, thought it was funny to dress up as Hitler to a fucking, like, you know, to a costume party, deserved to stand at least an hour on television for any reason.
He did. Like, he did that.
Google it. Now you know what you're gonna Google after this. It's there. It is there. You know, the days when he used to tweet about, like, you know, how he is, like, an openly fascist person. Like, if this is fascism, then I am fascism. And let me dress as Hitler to make sure that you get the idea that I'm a fascist. I love him so much. So when it comes to her, you might not believe that she matters, but, or, like, or you might correctly assess that when it comes to elections in a country that is also, let's not forget, like, you know, men run and patriarchal and and all of that stuff, right? Does not have a great opportunity, but she does have great name recognition locally, name recognition internationally. Like, everybody knows her. She is not disliked. She has no actual, like, scandals. Like, she's a straight shooter when it comes to certain issues and certain topics. People know her for, like, human rights work and. So, for, like, okay, you know how back in the U.S. elections, everybody who was running the Democratic Party, the one that Trump was afraid of was Biden? How it did not make sense at the time because we're like, sleepy Joe Biden, he is the problem. Yani, no. So, but in Trump's idea, that was the real threat. And for that reason, and he was not wrong. Biden beat him. Ended up getting the highest votes in history of the United States beyond those of Trump and Obama. Yani, so I think in this TC, like, truly thinks that the only person he has to worry about is Jamila Smail. Because a very big part of everything that he does, like, is his claim to fame of utilizing the concept of women's rights, the work that he did against harassment and so on and so forth. You know, the TV shows that they produced. He needs both Coptic, like, you know, seeming Coptic support and women's support, you know, to be the candidate for both in order for him to, like, continue to exist and operate internationally with some excuse, right? Because the excuse becomes, well, the cops, well, done.
I think we should also later on address the Coptic question, because I think that's extremely important, and the church and its role and so forth.
But that's it. So, like, do not discount Gamila. Like, you know, as far as, like, we discount Gamila as you want. But just know that Sisi does not discount him. Sisi, like, if he is worried about anyone, it's her.
Well, I think if you're paranoid, you can discount anyone. You don't have that privilege. But to start to reply to what you just said, I think what you said mostly would have applied had we been in 2011, but I don't think that's relevant anymore. I think if you look at Tantawi, I mean, of course she has a name and a name that's widely recognized, but I think Tantawi has a more relevant name. And he's utilizing social media in a way that is extremely smart. And if you look at his...
Anonymous post. Go ahead. I did not say that she will win. I did not say that she has the campaign. All I said was, you might not be worried about her. The elections might not be worried about her. But the only person that, like, he is truly worried about, it's her. And maybe Tantawi. But in terms of Egyptians, you're 100%. Ahmed Tantawi is more relevant currently. Please continue.
Yeah. So that was it. I think Tantawi is more popular, and let's say these six candidates were going to be on the ballot tonight, I think Tantawi is going to get the most votes.
Excluding
Sisi, of course.
Of course, but what makes Tantawi most popular?
I think it's because he appeals to the majority. And he doesn't have really a plan or a program, presidential program. Neither does any candidate so far. Part of that is because of these absurd dates, but...
Not to mention our own absurd challenges. Like, it's not just the dates. Like, the problems that we are facing as a country are not... like, there are no easy solutions at all, and nobody has tried to offer any, I think.
Definitely. And I think he not once addressed the economic turmoil Egypt is currently living, or addressed how he could change that. I mean, I saw his a comment he made a couple of weeks ago that upon winning Egypt's presidential election, hypothetically, of course, he would look into presidential palaces and how he could utilize them to the public, stuff like that. Because it's taken, it's costing the state money, which I thought was extremely, I want to use a respectful word here.
Limited.
Yeah, a very short-sighted look.
It's superficial.
Yeah.
You know, but also you are talking about the person who got into power as a member of parliament or the Nasserite Karama party. Mm-hmm. While on one side, but he was one of the loudest voices against, like, the expensiveness of things. He is still a Nasserite and has a Nasserite understanding of the economy, which does not differ at all that much from how Sisi sees the economy. And as you can see, so far, they have led to the conditions that we're in right now. So for him, like, suggest something economically absurd, as a Nasserite, yani, like, it is completely untrue. Because they have no real solutions whatsoever. It's not even socialism; it's something else, you know.
And also, his platform. There is no platform. It's just, you know, I'm gonna bring democracy. I'm gonna free the prisoners, and, you know, that's it.
That's the thing. He is running as Nazis.
Exactly.
Right. Biden and Trump, it's the same thing. Like, he's just running as the not CC candidate. And the thing is that, like, he is a known entity amongst people on Facebook, on YouTube, on TV.
Yes. Millions.
What?
Millions of people reacting with his content.
Because he was in the parliament and he used to fight some fights. And then he had to leave the country, and then he had to escape, and then suddenly he's back. And that now, and then we can talk, but like, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Did you watch what Alaa Aswani said about Ahmad Tantawi?
No, I did not. Even though I watch his lectures weekly.
So Alaa Aswani basically implied that like Tantawi is either an intelligence plant or does not know that he is being used by intelligence, the intelligence apparatus, you know, and that has led to like, you know, I found out about this because of course Amr Adib on his television show, you know, brought it up and was just like, how could you do this to each other? You are now making people doubt him, blah, 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 you know, but there used to be this prevailing like doubt that the ability for Tantawi to move and come back and operate has been covered by the security apparatus tacit approval or support. Do you think that people still believe so, especially after the news of the hack?
No. The idea has been decimated.
So he now has legitimacy on the street. He has legitimacy at people's like hearts as someone who is truly an opposition person and who is truly like not supported by the state.
Right.
Right? And that all it took was for them to hack him.
Also, yeah, and the hack itself. How much did he think that cost?
Well, so a zero-day exploit usually like is like it, in order for you to use a zero-day exploit or a zero-day exploit service, that's usually a lot of money, and it can go up all the way to $2.5 million. But I don't think this is how much they paid for it at Cryptex. I think it was much less than that. I think they just paid for the service. And if you pay for the service, then it's like, you know, a million and a half max, right? Maximum.
Or maybe a friend lent it.
Well, no, the point is, if you have read the report of Citizens Lab, it's super interesting, okay? Mm. Because the hack itself, sorry, I talk about, I used to work in the German cybersecurity organization. It's kind of my wheelbarrow, Marish.
No, go ahead.
So what happened was something called a man in the middle attack. And the idea of the man in the middle attack is like what happens to you when you go to the Chinese embassy. If you go to the Chinese embassy, your phone will connect to what seems to be an access point. Like, you know, this was found somewhere else as an access point to the network. But it's really a Chinese device that then routes itself to the network. And in the middle, it can filter all of your information and data and like get information, stuff like that. So a man in the middle attack is a hack that usually happens by placing an object or like something or a device between two things that are usually working together in sync and securely. And that's how you like infiltrate it. And that's how he ended up like getting someone placed it on either Vodafone or Egypt Telecom. They cannot define which one, but both of them happened in Egypt. Like the actual like hack happened in Egypt because someone placed a device on the network infrastructure that is run by the Egyptian state in order to infect his phone. And they managed to do it. They managed to do it by like basically sending him a message that he like that the phone that the predator software got installed on. And we're not sure whether he pressed the link or not. What's interesting is that after his phone got infected, he started getting suspicious WhatsApp messages with links that would get you to try to download the Predator software. And those are supposedly the things that got him suspicious of it. And that's the reason why like he contacted Ayman Noor, who had suffered from a similar hack in like I think 2018. And also Citizens Lab, like, you know, found stuff on his phone. But that's how this entire thing happened. So in order for it to work, right, deniability was gone. Yani the state's deniability on the hack, it happened on its land. It happened using a device on its network. But there is no deniability, right? The fact that the only reason what we found out is because somehow he ended up getting suspicious messages after it was downloaded, that's what makes the whole thing just like weird. It could be ineptness. We have seen Egypt being really inept, you know, but the whole thing is weird. However, regardless, because of this, they have caused that company, the zero-day exploit they were using, or to infect other people's phones. And given that they're a company that would used to sell their services to a country that has the to a state with the reputation of the Egyptian state, like, I am super happy at whatever explanation that took place for this act to happen, for it to have happened, because it means at least the governments of the world have one less way to spy on us. So thank God, yani fam. But this, the reality itself, like if you're conspiracy minded and if you're Egyptian, you are, like, damn, the amount of name recognition, the amount of street credibility, like, he was suddenly a serious candidate, not just locally, internationally. People knew who he was. And how much did that cost? How much did we pay for something like this? Like $1 million? You cannot buy this kind of fame and this kind of credibility with money. Suddenly, after that, he has 20,000 volunteers. He has, like, places everywhere. The whole thing is just, timing-wise, too perfect when you think about it. But, you know, let's not be conspiracy-minded, and let's talk about the facts. He is, people seem to like him. He is young. He has no... So, we ignore... Let's remove Sisi from the equation for a second.
Okay.
Right? And in this scenario, we are talking that we have a bunch of runner-ups, and between those candidates, Ahmed Tantawi so far seems to have the biggest name, biggest credibility, most excitement, and momentum. We agree on this. All right. Can we start talking about the problems that are facing the people, you know, that they're supposed to resolve? What is this election about? Is this election, as they always say, because, you know, the most important election in the history of Egypt? Or it's just, you know, business as usual and just another thing for another 6 years of Sisi. What do you think?
Well, I think it's really expressive that we didn't address the media and the crackdowns and everything, because it's almost like, you know, that's the reality. It's not even worth mentioning because that's been the norm now.
Media, was the media attack?
No, I mean, like, the media is completely state-run and state-owned and everything. Even Al-Masri Yom was just bought by United, the Shirk Al-Muttahida.
Oh, yes. Anyway, but yes, now it is owned. Now it is state-run completely. Yeah. Have you heard about the Fareed Zahran interview with Osama Kamel?
Yeah, I just read about it today.
They removed it, apparently. Like, he was not allowed to, like, be on air.
Yeah, so to give some background to the listeners, so Fareed Zahran, the guy we're just talking about, the president of the Egyptian Social Democratic Party, he was said to have had a scheduled interview that was actually recorded with a state-run TV channel, DMC, and the following day, or I think the day of, after they'd announced it and everything, they said that there were technical difficulties, so now it had to be... reviewed or some thing like that, which is basically censorship. They were censoring it. So a whole channel with a huge budget, with the police officers on deck, just, you know, making sure everything goes smoothly, claims to have technical difficulties. I host a podcast from my bedroom, and I've recorded over 30 hours, and I've never come across any technical difficulties that I wasn't able to solve, or, you know, have a backup recording or anything of that sort. So to do that, I think is very, I wouldn't say it's revealing, because I think it's become apparent the level of irrationality and just plain disregard and stupidity of how they are running things.
It's more a disarray. It's not really, like, it's not, I mean, there is no plan in which they're running. I think everybody is just doing whatever it is that they want.
With hope, with love. Everything is done with love.
With
as the Egyptian saying goes.
Also, I believe that about the technical difficulties that Fareed Zahran faced, like, you know, I believe that story. Like, and I started a rumor that was caused by his interference, caused by his hair. Have you seen his hair?
Yeah.
Fareed Zahran's hair is epic. You know, like, you know, if anybody's going to vote for a candidate for their hair, they should go for free. I'm just saying out there. The one with the best hair. Sorry, Gamil. I apologize. Anyway, so like, but like, that's the thing, right? Like, Fareed Zahran, technically, the SDP, like, Fareed Zahran is the father-in-law of, what's his name? Zeher Lalemi. Zeher Lalemi, for those who might not know, was an Egyptian opposition revolution MP who was released like last year, right? Mm. Before like national dialogue. And he was released wearing a suit and everything as part of a 2-day overture that CC tried, which, like, you know, to gain back some support. And then when people started saying that he is afraid and weak, he completely like turned back into being angry CC ever again. But this guy, so like, in order to like encapsulate it, the Egyptian Social Democratic Party was the first part, that was the party of the first CC government, of the transitional council of the first CC that got CC into power. It then ran in a coalition with state-backed, like, you know, parties and got some people in. Meanwhile, some of its members, you know, ended up being arrested and tried and imprisoned, including Zeher Lalemi, right, who is the son-in-law of Fareed Zahran, and who just got released last year. And now Fareed Zahran is running, and possibly, yani, according to at least to your analysis, by like backed by the state. And if you can understand how this web of conflicting motivations and relations operate, then you might have an idea about how messy the situation, the political situation in Egypt is after 10 years of Sisi's totalitarian ruling. The situation is messy, and it's really hard to like get a foothold on anything, you know. And I'm saying this from the outside. I don't know how is it like from the inside, and I don't know how is it like in the absence of, you know, media, because as you mentioned, a lot of the media, even the Facebook groups, are not being owned and run by intelligence. So what should the person who's trying to like get a foothold on this elections do, Mr. Anonymous Host?
Yeah, and I think that's what leads us to the next thing, is how they are, it almost seems as though they're instinctively trying to utilize divide and conquer. That right. Strategy of, you know, dispatching puppets mixed with real independent people. Tantawi Fareed Zahran, Gamil Ismail, Yamama, and that whole, you know, mix, the average Joe or the average Ahmed or the average Muhammad is unlikely to be able to tell the difference. How are they going to be able to do that? Especially that they're hungry.
But that's the strategy of Mubarak's election campaign in 2005. Have 9 candidates, all of them are jokers, right? But this is new for Sisi. Sisi usually runs against one person symbolically, right? What does that say about this time? Why is this happening this time? Is it because of the international pressure, or is it because of the internal situation? What has changed?
I think it's just a way of, one way of trying to paint another fictional picture to release some steam.
You mean like they're trying to pretend it's more free, like it's part of that whole national dialogue, releasing of prisoners, we are now allowing plurality into party, like
exactly kind, it's part of that whole shift into having not a blatant dictatorship, but a fake democracy.
So like kind of political virtue signaling, if one is.
Exactly, which I think is 100 times worse than having just a flat-out dictatorship.
I agree, especially if it's not done right. Like,
exactly.
It's annoying. Like, there are countries who completely run on this model, and it works, because there is, like, you know, there is an allowance for people to have politics and opinions and personal wins and stuff like that. We have been dealing, I think politically, with a vacuum. Nobody has been allowed to present anything, to critique anything, to comment anything, to contradict anything from Sisi before. And at the same time, and that has left the window of the opposition, like even the media, like, you know, that exists, that kind of has any kind of real journalism or news in it, is ironically many of the programs run by the Muslim Brotherhood, who are not the best source, who you should not trust, but people watch, not because they like the Brotherhood, but because literally nobody else mentions those news anymore. And it makes you wonder, like, if you control the entire media of a country, and that is still not enough for you to, like, either control the information or create support or create anonymity, what is the point?
Yeah.
Taking money? Do you want to take pictures with starlets? Like, what is the deal? Like, you know, I'm very confused by this. You know, I don't understand how this works. I don't understand how badly this works, you know? And I am not really sure, like, I can't decide whether having such media is a good thing or a bad thing, because yes, totalitarianism is bad, but nobody believes it anyway. Like, and it doesn't matter because the economic conditions are, like, causing, like, I think for the first time, nobody's able to argue that we're heading in the wrong direction. We have been having people who have been arguing and arguing and arguing that somehow what we're going through is some sort of economic like reform or whatever. And I don't think anybody believes that anymore. Can you? What do you think about the economic situation?
Well, I think that's the most important problem we're in right now. Not the political, but the economic. Because if you look at it realistically, which I also addressed in episode 21 on the National Dialogue, the political problems are easily solvable because it's mostly, I think, one institution that is 80% of the problem, which is a state sec. Let's say that quickly. But the economics, however, I mean, it takes their whole platform, Tantawi and the other candidates, their platform is not, you know, I'm going to create jobs, I'm going to do this and that. No, it's just I'm going to release prisoners, stuff like that, which is, we need not, well, let me rephrase that. We need not a savior. We need someone who understands how to
fix this.
Yeah.
So we don't need a populist hero. We need a technocrat hero, basically. Like, you know,
yeah. Not even a hero. We just need someone that can take criticism, that can actually have, that actually understands what they're doing. I don't think a military officer knows shit about the economy, and that's why we're so, it's not even a military officer. I think it's just the military way of thinking. I think it's very rigid, and it's just...
So I think that none of those people have a grasp on the problems. They might understand its symptoms, but I'm not sure any of them knows how to fix it. I think the only thing that would be better about having any of them there is that they're, you know, at least when it comes to Gamila and possibly Farid, you know, they'll probably be willing to listen, you know, to bring in people who might actually, like, be good at what they're doing and try to work things out. You know, they might be willing to listen, which is something that the current president has not been willing to do for the past 12 years. He is a true believer in himself and in his vision, and in that nobody else's opinion is right, and that anything that's bad that's happening to him is someone else's fault. But the problems are, we have huge, incredible debts. We have huge international projects that were completely, like, graft, if not waste. You know, we have for 2 years now dollar shortages that affected the import and export, the production of everything entire. Like, there isn't many merchandise in Egypt, as far as I know. If you want to buy things that are supposedly, like, you know, exported, it's really hard to source them. You know, you're dealing with daily rises in inflation. We're dealing with allegedly three different, like, you know, floatings of the currency that actually, like, did not, they never really floated it. And that's why we still have like, you know, 40 Egyptian pounds in the black market for every dollar, even more. Okay? And we have no assurance whatsoever that even if they try to, like, you know, float the pound, that they will change the way they operate, because at the end of the day, we have created in the last 10 years a new aristocracy, a new ruling class, and it is the warrior class. And it will be very hard, and this is like very hard, to get them to give up their economic interests for the sake of the country. And therein lies the rub, that if you end up with Sisi, you'll end up with more of the same, which means that the country is heading towards the, you know, an endless abyss of just like devaluations and inflation until we become Mozambique. And if someone else comes along, they have to figure out how to get the military people to stop trying to take everything, the economy, and to allow the country to live. And those are really hard questions to answer. I don't think many people have answers to them. So I don't know, man. Like, I wish everybody the best. I hope whoever wins. Like, you know, وَرَبَّنَا وَلِي الْأَصْلَحِ and all this stuff. But, like, honestly, if this was a real elections, if this was truly a real elections, like, and they might have had a chance to win, I am telling you, most of those people would not even be running, because even they have enough common sense to know that the problems are bigger than them and their ability to handle them. He truly, like, created a situation in which, for the first time in Egypt, nobody wants to be in power. Nobody wants to be a man. Nobody wants to be responsible. He continues to exist and operate simply because there is no one else who is willing to take the job right now after everything that he's done. And that is new, man. God be with us all. Kyle, may this election be as quick and painless, you know, as it is healing, hopefully, to the country.
So I think this brings this episode to an end. And thank you so much, Mahmoud, for coming on the podcast and for sharing your analysis and commentary. And as we go forward, as the election looms, we're going to be meeting.
We're going to do a second round. That would be fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm sorry for the depressive stuff and for the really embarrassing laugh. I don't know what part of me is a belly dancer. Yeah.